Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Dave James. In a moment, we'll bring you portions of the daily briefings conducted by Ohio Governor Mike DeWine and State Health Director Dr. Amy Acton. They've become a regular part of the day for many Ohioans. Then I'll talk with Michael Schettinger, president of Schettinger Funeral Homes and Cremation Services in Columbus, about how they're dealing with social distancing. In about 25 minutes, I'll talk with Ohio Northern University political science professor Robert Alexander. He's involved with the Great Lakes Poll, which asked people in Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania about the presidential race and America's response to the coronavirus. And I'll wrap up the hour talking with Dwayne Casares, CEO of Directions for Youth and Families, about how the virus is affecting his agency. First up on Columbus Perspective, here's about 10 minutes of previous daily briefings from Governor Mike DeWine and Dr. Amy Acton, who's the head of the Ohio Department of Health. Governor DeWine's portion focuses on Friday when he told Ohio he had received some rather alarming news from the Cleveland Clinic. Dr. Acton's portion comes from Thursday when she again urged Ohioans to help flatten the curve by staying home. Here's Governor Mike DeWine.
Throughout the press conferences that we've held since the beginning press conference, we have committed to you that we would tell you what we know when we know it. And today we continue that. This morning, I had a call with the Cleveland Clinic. Folks at the Cleveland Clinic, Dr. Acton and I did, and they gave us the new information that they have in regard to their modeling and their projections. A couple points from the highlights of what we were told this morning by the Cleveland Clinic and their modeling. First of all, within about 2 weeks, and we're continuing to see it go up, but within about 2 weeks, it's going to kick in much harder. And we're really going to start getting hit very hard in our hospitals, in our hospital admissions. They project that we may not hit the peak until now mid-May. Again, modeling is a science, it's an art, but this is the best information, the newest information that I wanted to share with you. In addition to that, they are telling us that we need now to look to a 2 and possibly 3 times build out of what we have today in our hospital beds, in our ICU beds. So they're telling us now 2 to 3 times, and we really ought to plan for 3 times. So as you can see, we have a long way to go. And that's the stark reality. The good news, our hospitals have all been thinking about this, planning for this, and beginning to move forward. But in that regard, we are now really closing up the planning, now moving to the action. We've been on the phone today with a number of the hospitals. We're gonna have another call later to kind of bring them up to date in regard to this. I have asked, we've divided the state into 8 regions, and I've asked each region to have their collective plan on my desk. I've asked them to have the final draft, and I say final, it's always a work in progress, there will always be some changes, we understand that. But a completed draft to us by 12 noon on Monday. I have asked General Harris of the Ohio National Guard to oversee this buildup. And again, many of the hospitals have plans down the pathway in regard to the implementation of these plans. But General Harris is not in his capacity really as head of the guard, but in a new capacity. So I wanted today just to bring everybody up to date on, again, trying to share with you the information we have as we have it. we are moving forward. I don't want anyone to be alarmed, but I also want everyone to understand what we face. Again, two things we have to do. We got to do them simultaneously. One is the social distancing. One is to slow this thing down. The other is to build up and build up very, very, very quickly. We do not have a lot of time. As I said, the projection is we start really getting slammed in 2 weeks, but may not even hit the peak until mid-May. So our goal, what we want for every Ohioan, is that they be able to be cared for, no matter where they are, what county they live in, rural, urban, suburban, that there be a pathway for them if in fact they get sick. As Dr. Acton has said, most of us, we hope, who get this will stay at home, be able to be cared for. 20% or so of us will not be, and a certain percentage of those will end up in the ICU. The hospital stays are a lot longer than we're used to, and so that's another thing that's going to put immense pressure on our hospitals. So again, there are plans. We will share those plans in broad terms as we move forward. We certainly cannot do that today, but each region is working and has been working for this moment. And for this moment is we now move into really high gear. We put the accelerator down. We go as fast as we can. We're now into the building mode. We're now into execution and getting it done. Dr. Acton.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's good to see you again. I don't know about you, but this time of day, being together with the governor and lieutenant governor have been sort of the anchor for me these days. It's a flurry of busyness before. Spent the morning at the Emergency Operating Center, and we'll continue back there afterwards. And we go way into the evening, but somehow we always end up back here together. So it's good to see you. I'm going to go ahead and start with some of our data and announcements. First of all, I want to share with you today that we have created a new dashboard and a new website facing a feature that is very interactive. I want to thank again, I've been calling them the force, but they are these amazing data analysts and predictive analysts who are working to bring you the kind of data that the governor has promised and in trying to be as transparent as possible. So you'll find our new dashboard will be interactive. You'll be able to see more about county level age, demographics. And we've also changed how we are showing our cases for the disease detectives and people who are following this. We're doing the symptom onset date, so the actual date when people had symptoms. It gives us a little better understanding of when the disease was first with us. Remember, all the way back in February, now from the onset of symptoms as the cases come. So it's not just the cases, remember, but asking people when they really first were experiencing the symptoms of coronavirus and COVID-19. We also know that we are staying around the area of 11% of our cases are ending up in the ICU. Also on our website, we have information about the age range of folks ending up in the ICU is from 23 years of age to 92 years of age. And again, we're highlighting our healthcare workers. We are looking at 17% of those testing positive are in healthcare workers, and we really are trying to track the impact on our healthcare capacity, as the governor said, on folks that are on the front line, not just our nurses and our docs, but folks in nursing homes, our EMS, our firefighters, and our police. As the governor said, we're working closely with our hospitals in a regional model to build out our capacity. We'll have more on that for you. One thing I'd like to touch on. A hospitalized patient is in a hospital with coronavirus, with COVID-19, for up to 20 days. Remember I told you about, by the time you're diagnosed, remember, from when you're first infected, it might be 5 to 14 days before you show symptoms. It's another 9 to 12 days between someone who's actually has a disease might need hospitalized. It's another week or more before they might end up in an ICU, and our fatalities, our deaths follow those ICUs by up to 4 weeks. So everything we're seeing is lagging. And it's a lot like restaurants. They try to guess how many tables they'll need for a night. And whether we realize it or not, they're trying to flip those tables every hour to hour and a half. And that's how they staff, and that's how they know how many tables they'll be able to fill. And that's, you know, what we're looking at is more like a long four-course meal. Even though our hospitals have capacity that they usually gear up for, they're often looking at staying times of 3 days. But we know that we're going to hit peak capacity that we've never seen before in this country, and that folks are staying longer. And so that's why we know we really need to increase our capacity in our hospitals. Everything you're doing matters. It's life and death. And folks, please pay attention. You see what's happening in New York. You see what's happening in places like Louisiana. This is real, and everything each of us is doing matters. Last night, I had a phone call with my husband. My husband, Eric, has been a school teacher for 35 years, most of it an elementary first grade teacher. He's also a coach. He works a lot with people driving the school buses, and we got a call from a close colleague, and Jennifer, I'm thinking of you. She here in Franklin County lost her father. She called to ask again about funerals and what her and her family could do. These are very, very tough times, and we talk through, you know, you definitely, you know, need to know that how we mourn and how we celebrate things like weddings is going to be different. You don't want these events to be the thing that got other people in your family sick or have somebody die. Folks are postponing things, doing celebrations of life later, because they just don't want to put others in their family at risk. And these are very, very sad and very hard things we're going through together. But we are together. Stay home, Ohio, stay strong, stay together, stay at home, reach out to each other. Thank you.
Governor Mike DeWine and Dr. Amy Acton, Director of the Ohio Department of Health, from This Week.
I'm Ohio Governor Mike DeWine. We're at war with the coronavirus, very dangerous and lethal enemy. You can help by staying home. If you must go out, keep 6 feet from other people to protect yourself, people living with you, and others. Every action we take or don't take has a real impact. Ohio, we're in this together.
Furnished by Governor Mike DeWine and the OAB.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan. Hi, this is Dave James, and joining me via Skype is Mr. Michael Schettinger. He's the president of Schettinger Funeral and Cremation Services. How are you?
Good morning. Good to be with you, Dave.
Thanks for talking to us. We are talking to you under some extraordinary circumstances, and your business is one of those that's pretty greatly impacted by it.
Yeah, we are, fortunately, we are exempt from all the rules and laws about being closed. We've been determined by the Department of Homeland Security to be an essential business, probably for obvious reasons, and all of our associates are still coming to work, and we've shifted a lot of our business away from in-person meetings to phone and video meetings, which is a challenge because, as you can imagine, we deal with an elderly population, and they may not have the same technology that younger folks have.
Tell us a little bit about Schettinger, because I saw a story on 10 TV, and I was amazed at how long that you've been around.
Yeah, our family business was founded in 1855 by my great-great-great-grandpa. So my cousin and my brother and I are sixth-generation owners of the business. We have 15 locations around Central Ohio. We serve several thousand families with human deaths, pet deaths, and pre-planning. And we've just, our primary goal is to create a healing experience for all these folks that we serve on a terrible day for them.
What's the oldest photograph you have of the business?
Oh, what a great question. I've never had that one before. I have a whole collection of, we have three scrapbooks, and I wish your folks could see what these look like. They're like 3 foot by 2 foot books, scrapbooks. They're very heavy. They're not 8.5 by 11s like we all have today at home. And they have all kinds of newspaper clippings and ads that we ran about. We were the first funeral home. We were the first. We were the second building in Columbus to get air conditioning.
Wow.
We were the first funeral home in Ohio to get a motorized hearse. But probably my favorite antique item is an invoice that we have from 1861, which is in that, it's like on ledger paper, and it's in a real cool calligraphy font that they all wrote in back then, and the entire funeral was $28.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Now, these days, with what is going on, social distancing is a big part of what we're being asked to do. And I guess that's what most profoundly impacts what you do.
Yeah, unfortunately for us, this social distancing is a challenge, not because we can't physically do it. It's because we emotionally want to do it. We are in a business when people have extreme emotions. They might be sadness, obviously. They may be anger, they may be worry, they may be disappointment. You just don't know. And we are in a business where these folks walk in the door to plan a funeral, meet a total stranger many times, have to spend thousands of dollars. And all of that is done with a person that you would hopefully will become friends with, you'll establish a relationship with. You are there to support them and help them through this terrible time. And the first thing you want to do is give them a hug or even shake their hand, and you just can't do that right now. So it's very awkward having people come in. You don't have any personal touch. You sit down, you plan. And then when you have the day of the event, you know, we're used to having events with hundreds of people, the public coming in for visitations, coming in for services, and we interact, we support these people that are grieving. And now we can't do that, and we have our chairs are sitting 10 feet apart, and there's just, it's just awkward. The good news is, with the technology that we have at Schoettinger, we are able to live stream our funerals, and we're doing that for no charge. And so we are able to include the rest of the community that's not there in the event. It's just via the internet and not in person. So we're making do the best we can, but it's not ideal.
I guess, too, what is kind of shocking about it all is that you may have had people approaching you who already had someone perhaps in their family who was critically ill and began to make arrangements before all this started to happen. And it's just like everything all changes at once.
Yeah. We've had funerals of well-known people in town that died right before this started, and we made a plan. And fortunately, in the very beginning, we were allowed to still have events in our funeral home. And then the first change came and said no more than 50, and then another change came that said no more than 10. We're still exempt in that we could probably have events with more people, but as a company, we are just practicing 10 or less. And I'm actually aware of a couple specific funerals where the family has 15 or 20, and we simply have to have two funerals or two viewings of the person, where we bring in 10 and then we send them away, we clean the building, and then another group comes in. And so you have to do it in shifts, and that's just certainly not what you want.
Kind of an odd question that I'm hesitant to even ask, but I guess it's pertinent. If somebody were to pass away from this virus, from your point of view, is that situation handled differently?
Well, I mean, we've always practiced the universal precautions with every deceased person that we handle, and we pretend or treat them as if they had a contagious disease. Certainly in these situations, we are wearing extra protective gear, doing much more sanitizing and disinfecting when we move a person. So, yes, we are being extra precautious. My biggest fear is the number of deaths increases. We've already received, I think, 3 or 4 calls where we were told this person died of the COVID virus. I don't know if they've all been necessarily tested, but in this first week, we've served a few families, And, you know, we think the embalming process and the other things we do will allow the family to say goodbye to their loved one and not worry about those things. But at the same time, almost everyone's just practicing precaution. And, you know, one of the other things that makes me so sad is when these families are in the hospital, they're not even allowed to be with their loved one in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Do you see with the live streaming and all that, that's sort of been coming along in some ways anyway. Do you see changes sticking around beyond, you know, some of the protocol that you have to adapt? Might it stick around in the future?
You know, I don't know. We've been capable of webcasting funerals for years. We were probably the first funeral home to be able to do that many, many years ago. I'm going to say 10 years ago as a guess. And very few people take us up on it. Some of the earliest people were when a soldier was overseas in the war and wasn't able to get home. And we would stream the video for him so he could be at his grandpa or grandma's funeral, as an example. But we haven't had a lot of people use it. Ironically, haven't had a lot of people use it even now. Hmm. I think it will increase. I think, you know, we've had some families literally walk in and FaceTime their loved ones on their own phone. And we'll do whatever we can to just help people connect. That's what's important right now. And many people are choosing to say in their obituary, a private family gathering is going to occur now because of the current circumstances. And we plan on a future celebration of life or something like that when we're all allowed to gather again. So I expect this summer will be busy with lots of funerals and receptions.
Talking with Michael Schettinger, he's the president of Schettinger Funeral and Cremation Services. So if somebody is in need of your services while all this social distancing and everything is going on, what can they expect when they give you a call?
Well, we answer our phone 24 hours a day at Schettinger with a licensed funeral director. We don't have an answering machine or an answering service. When we ever get a call about somebody wanting to pre-plan or a plan for a death, we have a number of very experienced funeral directors that will offer to have that planning meeting with the family, and they will do it over the phone, do it over video, or if the family does want to come in, we will meet them in our buildings if they want to see pictures of caskets or not pictures, but actual caskets or urns or whatever. We have those available to them, and we will accommodate whatever their needs are.
And once the event at the funeral home itself finishes and you head to the cemetery, if that's the case, does that become much more typical of the past? As far
yes.
as, you know, the changes
yeah,
that have been
traditional. I don't know what percentage of our families are still having a procession to the cemetery, and a lot of them are just now meeting at the cemetery, and the ceremony's at the graveside where we can all be outdoors and it's a little safer. But certainly a lot of people are gathering, especially when it was cold and rainy in our buildings. Now we're starting to get a little nicer weather, but we'll do whatever we can for them.
Michael, just a moment or so to go here. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, thank you for the opportunity to let people know that funerals are still a very important ritual in our society. People need to go through their grief journey. And my biggest fear is people don't do anything. And then all of those emotions are just pent up inside. I mean, a famous grief therapist said the only way to heal is to go through our pain and not around our pain. And so going and having a funeral and saying goodbye to your loved one and honoring their life are all the rituals that I believe are so important when a loved one dies.
A difficult time all the way around, and certainly the experience of your company involved in this pays dividends, I'm sure.
Yes, it helps to have been doing this for 165 years, and we've got 200 wonderful associates that help us, and I think we do really creative funerals. We learn about the life that's been lived and really try and create a theme around that and have the families, you know, I've always said at the end, we know we did a good job when we get that thank you hug. Now we're not getting that thank you hug, but right. Certainly getting the thank yous.
Michael Schettinger, President, Schettinger Funeral and Cremation Services. Thanks so much for your time today. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you as well.
Hi, this is Dave James, and joining me by Skype is Professor Robert Alexander from Ohio Northern University. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Dave. We're doing the best that we can under the circumstances. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, who would have ever thought this would be going on? Both of us sitting in our houses, talking, and obviously everybody knows why. What's going on at Ohio Northern? How is the school adapting, and what are you doing?
Well, I think just like everybody, we've had to turn on a dime very, very quickly. We moved to online teaching. I think we got an email on maybe a Monday or Tuesday that was a possibility. And by Friday, we were moving classes online. And that following Monday then, there we were. We were doing live lectures. We've been doing we've all been learning a lot along the way. And I think the students have adapted pretty well. We are certainly very empathetic to their issues because, you know, just like many of us, they have to adapt and learn in some environments and in some ways that they probably, you know, there's a reason they chose a small residential university to go to. They wanted that in-person lecturing style. So it's certainly been an adaption for them as well. But we're all doing the best that we can under the conditions.
Is the biggest concern kind of changing your style and ways of doing it, or is it the technology itself?
Well, it's probably a little bit of both. I myself am very much a lecturer. I like to ask questions. I like that engagement, which I know that you can do online, but it's certainly not the same. I think it's actually a little bit of a slap in the face to those who do online teaching for a living. To think that for me to think that I can just go online and do it in the same kind of fashion. I mean, there's a real art and experience that goes along with that. The kind of engagement that I want to get from my students, it's really difficult to do that. Kind of working with students behind the scenes on advising issues and other issues that come up in their lives has been a real challenge. I really miss them. I miss their energy. They feed me energy just as much as I'm trying to bring the energy. And so I'm doing all that I can to try and keep that flame ignited, reaching out to students frequently. I think that our university at ONU has done a good job of trying to keep students updated, trying to keep parents updated. But we're all in this together, and we're all doing our best.
And obviously all this happening for a very important reason. And there's so many tragedies and bad stories involved with what's happening all around the world. And also just for students, you know, it's so close to the end of the school year for them when this happened. It's very disruptive.
Well, it's interesting. When the talk first started, you could just see those graduating seniors. One of my seniors, I mentioned in class, one of our last classes, how, nobody could foresee this. I feel really bad for them. And you could just see tears well up in their eyes. And, nobody would want to see something like this occur. But at the same time, I think everybody recognizes that it's all relative, right? And things could be much worse if you had a family member that was struck with this. We're seeing the severity of it throughout the United States right now. And so I think that it's put a lot of things into context, things that I think a lot of students and certainly even you and I probably took for granted a while back, and just being able to go to class and maybe for some of these students to be bored, but to see some of their friends and have that social interaction. I've really been trying hard to emphasize that, you know, we need to maintain social interaction, but just keep that physical distance. And so I think that that's actually going to be one of the bigger issues that we're all going to face is, the isolation piece of this. And, we talk about a little bit of this in the public opinion poll, but I think there's some things that are lurking there in American society probably won't be addressed until we get, some of these other things kind of resolved down the line.
Talking with Rob Alexander, political science professor at Ohio Northern University. Now, we talked to you a few weeks ago, and this is kind of part two. It's part of the Great Lakes poll, which Ohio Northern is involved with Baldwin Wallace and also Oakland University in Michigan. Give us some background on the poll.
Well, this has been one of the most rewarding professional experiences that I've been involved with in working with my colleagues there. Lauren Copeland's kind of been the lead person there at Baldwin Wallace and Terry Towner at Oakland. We've been able to team together to put forth these public opinion polls. We're surveying people in registered voters in Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. All four of these states voted for Barack Obama in 2008 and in 2012. And all four of these states then voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and really provided the margin of victory that he needed to capture the Electoral College. Now, three of those states, all but Ohio, went for Trump by 1% or less. So they're going to be super important again in 2020. People really want to know what's happening in these battleground states, in these Great Lakes states. And in our first iteration of the poll, we found all kinds of interesting things, and we're going to do four of these all together. In this second snapshot that we've taken, we sure did not expect several months ago that we would be spending time talking about a virus, talking about shutting down essentially the American economy. And here we are. We decided, you know, this is really part of the public record. This is the kind of stuff that I think historians will be talking about many, many years from now. And getting a snapshot in time about what voters in these critical states are thinking, I think is really going to be a public service much further on down the line.
And we'll get into some of the comments, the opinions people have about the virus itself, which you did address in the poll. As far as the actual voting for president, just like the last time, Trump has more support in Ohio than he does the other states, as it was back in the election.
Yeah, so Ohio, there's a lot of chatter right now about, is Ohio still a swing state? It's always been a bellwether state. It's very difficult for a president to, or a candidate to win the presidency without winning Ohio. And it appears as though Ohio has certainly trended more red. Democrats had a great year in 2018, and yet Sherrod Brown was the only Democrat that was able to carry the state back in that really strong year for Democrats. So, you know, when we kind of examine these states in context, Ohio is definitely trending a little bit more red. Donald Trump does very well in the state of Ohio. We did ask some questions. We did do some head-to-heads this time around with Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders against Donald Trump. And we found that really Trump does, they're all within the margin of error when we take Trump against Joe Biden. But he does particularly well against Biden in Ohio and in Pennsylvania. In Michigan, Donald Trump actually comes up short. Biden takes Trump in Michigan, and it's essentially a tie in Wisconsin. In all four of those states, Biden does better against Trump than Sanders does. So we kind of were seeing that in the Democratic nomination contest, that it was trending to Biden. We've seen a huge disruption now in that process, but it would appear then that Joe Biden would likely give Democrats the best shot to win in these battleground states. But again, under these conditions, and again, we want to add a little bit of caution. These are really unprecedented circumstances, and we think that we're seeing a little bit of a rally around the flag effect with President Trump right now too. So his numbers did bump upwards a bit. We expect them to come down. We'll be doing a third poll later this summer, so we'll see where we're at that point, and hopefully all of this coronavirus and the economy again can kind of get its footing under itself.
Well, one of the things that you asked was what issues were most important. And in Ohio, 32% said the economy, 33% said healthcare. And both of those going forward are still going to be huge issues because of the virus.
These are critical issues. And the difference that we saw back in the end of January when we did this poll to today is pretty big. It's a pretty big jump for healthcare as the most important issue for voters in these states. It's unsurprising. I mean, it really has brought the country to its knees. It's brought the region to its knees, and not only from the healthcare perspective of it, but certainly the economy. When we did this poll back in January, there was a lot of optimism about the economy. Most folks in this region thought that the economy's done better in the past year and had great hope for the economy. Today, that's a very different tune that we're seeing in this poll. Voters are very concerned. They're very worried. They're very anxious about the future of the economy. And we just had a report come out this week that more than tripled the amount of unemployment claims that we've ever seen in this country. And that, again, spells a lot of concern for many Americans. in this political contest.
Ohio, last week, 187,000 new applications for unemployment, which was the second highest monthly total ever. And it was all in 1 week. Unbelievable.
It's I think it's got a lot of people very terrified, frankly. You know, voters really want to see our government succeed right now. We nobody's rooting against Donald Trump or rooting against Republicans or rooting against Democrats. This is a true crisis. That's the rally around the flag. Just like wartime, Donald Trump talked about being a wartime president. Well, in some ways, he absolutely is with this coronavirus. And people want to see some success. They, you know, whether they like the messenger or not, they want the outcome to be good for all Americans. I was shocked at how much bipartisan support there is for a number of the restrictions that have been placed upon, you know, our ability to go out there and gather in all kinds of areas. And that is reflected, I think, in the extraordinary approval rating for our governor, Mike DeWine. Mm-hmm. DeWine has got an approval rating around 80% for his response to the coronavirus. Now, it's hard to get 80% of Americans to agree on about anything.
Right.
And you've got 80% of Democrats on board with DeWine. You know, and he's a Republican. And so he has, I would argue that he's really taken politics out of his response to the coronavirus. You know, his decision to postpone the primary election, when he did that the night before the primary election was to happen, it was pretty shocking. It was pretty jarring. And I don't think that the rest of the country had really caught up mm-hmm. to the urgency to which DeWine was suggesting that we needed to show. And his deference to experts, to expertise in areas that he doesn't have, for him to not really play politics here has really served him well. I think that Democrats and Republicans alike appreciate that he has he's made decisions that he thinks are in the best interest of Ohioans and not necessarily his political reputation.
I think that people have been struck by how the governor and also Dr. Amy Acton, the health director, have been very upfront about, you know, blunt about what could happen, and but not alarming people, being calm and cool about the whole thing.
That's the kind of leadership that I think most Americans are looking for, particularly in a crisis situation. You know, again, if we liken it to that wartime situation, you know, George W. Bush, mm-hmm. we go back to September 11th, he had a rally around the flag effect that's been unsurpassed previously and since. If you go back to the election of 2000, you might recall just how controversial that election was. But when September 11th happened, you know, it wasn't red America, blue America, it was all of America. And George W. Bush, he had a certain confidence. He had a leadership where he was trying to bring all Americans together, no real panic there. And he enjoyed over 90% approval rating in the days and weeks after September 11th. I think we're seeing a little bit of this certainly with Mike DeWine right now.
Talking with Rob Alexander, political science professor at Ohio Northern University. Their Great Lakes poll is out in collaboration with Baldwin-Wallace University and Oakland University in Michigan. If the virus is conquered or fades or whatever happens to it to where it's not as big of a current issue and life-disrupting situation come election time or in the weeks leading up to election time, there's going to be a big debate about, as the economy does whatever it's doing by then, whether people blame Trump or not. That's going to be, it seems like, one of the big fights going forward if the virus takes second fiddle to that.
Well, there's a couple of things that we actually found in the poll that are pretty interesting. And again, this is a poll that we're taking in March. It's a poll that we don't have a Democrat, you know, against him yet for sure. It's a poll we're in the midst of this unprecedented crisis. But there are certain things that do stand out. For instance, when you take a look at how much do people trust the information that they're getting from President Trump, we find that Democrats by far do not trust what President Trump has to say about the coronavirus. We find that while Republicans do have trust for him, the number of Republicans that greatly trust him is not super high. So you know, the credibility factor in trying to determine, well, how good of a response did the president give versus was the response, you know, due to the governors, trying to determine who gets the credit if things go as well as they could possibly be expected versus who gets the blame. And that will be, I think, certainly something that we're going to see for much of the run into the November election. And again, the economy is the huge X factor in all of this.
Talking with Rob Alexander, he is a political science professor at Ohio Northern University in Ada in Northwest Ohio. I remember a few weeks ago when we talked, you said, if I was a Democrat running against President Trump, I would make the election about him, not my policies.
Yeah. Well, and I think that I think I'm kind of extending that right now by saying if I were Donald Trump, I wouldn't make it about myself. I would make it about the experts around me to try and extend some of that goodwill to Americans to say, hey, we are fighting for you. I'm not going to be defensive. This is all of us in this together. Don't pick fights with Democratic governors. Don't pick fights and try and assign blame to somebody else. Nobody wants to see somebody assign blame in a situation like this. If we're a hardcore Trump supporter, okay, that's, you know, you're probably getting pretty excited about that. But that's not most Americans. You know, in our poll, one of the things that we found was that a supermajority of voters think that this is a crisis. And to downplay the crisis is not good politics, but it's also not good policy. So I think that President Trump would be very well served to kind of dial down the divisive rhetoric and, again, kind of continue to push more unifying rhetoric. And I think this is one of the reasons why we're not seeing much of Joe Biden. You know, Joe Biden is just – he has nothing to gain, really, by getting out there and being in the public. He is – I think trying to allow Donald Trump to say and do some things that he may be able to use against him in a November election. Again, kind of to my point that the election would be about Trump. You know, it's going to be very difficult if the economy does not bounce back in the ways that I think that the president would like it to bounce back, because that's really been keeping him afloat as far as his public opinion approval ratings throughout this time. Trying to gauge the amount of blame or that people will give on, that will assign to President Trump on this, that's very difficult to gather, certainly at this point.
Just a moment or so to go here, Rob. Anything else that you want to add about the poll?
Well, I think it was very interesting to see the amount of support that there was with in agreeing that, you know, yeah, go ahead and cancel the NBA season, March Madness, postpone NHL, Major League Baseball, those types of things. Seemed really unimportant in the midst of a public health crisis that we're finding ourselves in. It's good to see so many people agree with that they are washing their hands more. They're abiding by many of the prescriptions that are being put out there as far as staying away from other people, engaging in that social distancing. That it seems like that there is a lot of bipartisan support. There are changes in behavior, which is critical for us to flatten the curve, to kind of, you know, deal with this particular crisis. So there are some points here where we say, oh, that's good that we're seeing that. It has changed behaviors. And again, we're seeing some bipartisan support for some of our public leaders, which, you know, in these times of pretty bitter, divided partisanship is good to observe.
The poll even showed 75% to 80% approval of closing bars and restaurants to flatten the curve, as they say. But the way that the president's been talking about, you know, wanting to open things up by Easter, at least in some areas of the country, that could become a contentious issue as well.
And you're seeing this between, in some states, particularly some southern states with some Republican governors that are, you know, Florida has been one of those that's been criticized, Alabama, Mississippi, that they are very reluctant to close down the economy on these things. And that is creating a lot of conflict among public health experts and the political side of things. So, you know, I hate to think of it as a balancing between the economy and healthcare. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reality is we need healthy people. And if we don't have healthy people out there, we can't have an economy. It would seem to me. I'm just a simple country guy trying to make sense of the world. But it seems to me that if we've got people in hospital beds, and you know, we have to be able to take care of one another in order for us to have a functioning economy moving forward. So I think removing some of the politics from this and allowing the experts to kind of guide us in how we ought to be restricting this and limiting this would be pretty beneficial to us all.
Robert Alexander, political science professor, Ohio Northern University. Rob, if folks want to see this poll online, can they find it there?
They absolutely can find it there. Baldwin Wallace has a site that is hosting it. And I'll give a shout out to Cleveland.com. Cleveland.com has they have a whole host of articles. They have great coverage of the poll. So you can check out a number of their articles there. We've seen it also indexed on 538.com and 270 to win, which are some national websites, which again, very good stuff for these small little powerhouses, Baldwin Wallace, Ohio Northern University, and Oakland University.
All right, Rob, good to catch up with you again, and we'll check in again when you do number three.
Hopefully it'll be happier times and we'll all be healthy, safe, and economically secure.
All right, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Dave, always a pleasure.
Hello, I'm Todd Markowitz, Vice President and General Manager of Radio Ohio, which owns 97.1 The Fan. We're an equal opportunity employer dedicated to providing broad outreach efforts regarding job vacancies within our company. We seek the help of local organizations in referring qualified applicants. Organizations that wish to receive our vacancy information should send their request to the attention of Human Resources, Radio Ohio, 770 Twin Rivers Drive, Columbus, 43215. If you'd like to view our current job openings, please visit our website at 971thefan.com and thanks for listening.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
Hi, this is Dave James, and joining me on the phone this time is Dwayne Casares. He's the CEO of Directions for Youth and Families. How you doing, Dwayne?
I'm doing great, Dave. I don't have to be in the same room with you.
There you go. I guess one advantage to the whole situation. We are, of course, social distancing, but you and I kind of do that anyway, right?
Yes, whenever necessary and possible.
So, what's going on in the post-coronavirus world for Directions for Youth and Families?
Well, as regular listeners would know, you know, most of our agency is outreach case managers who work with kids and their families and clear in the homes and the schools. We've had people on the streets, so we are using Skype, Discord, things I've never even heard of. I didn't even know what Discord was, but many people use it, I guess. FaceTime, all those types of things to continue to reach who we serve. Our two after-school centers had to shut down because of the numbers of people that we serve at those centers isn't allowed anymore. Our staff, honestly, were very concerned about what they were going to do since we feed them after school every day. So we mobilized all of our staff in our after-school centers. They are preparing takeout meals for both lunch and dinner. I think our first day it was something like 72 meals. By our fifth day it was over 400.
Wow.
So we're going to continue doing that for as long as we can. It's, you know, I think everybody is struggling. I think trying to meet basic needs, it's going to be tough all the way around, but for the people we serve, sometimes it's a little bit different. So we want to do what we can to continue to be there for them and support them. And it's not just the whole mental health field has been for the essential service. So all of us are still trying to provide services where we can.
You have therapists, counselors who go out into the field to talk to your clients. Obviously, that has to be changing right now. So what's happening in that area?
Yeah, all of them are in-house. Those are the ones that are using telehealth and Skype and all those other things to be able to reach their clients. So they're still holding sessions. It's difficult at sometimes because, as you can imagine, so when we work with families and we go out to like schools or their homes, you know, all they got to do is answer the door or walk into the classroom. They don't have to answer a phone when we call them in. Sometimes they don't want some of the things that we're trying to work through or deal with. I've always said from the beginning, with great courage to enter into therapy, because that's a huge first step. But you get resistance along the way. But we're working around those things. And for the most part, we're being successful in it. It took a little while to transition, but I think all of us are transitioning to new ways of doing things.
Certainly, we're going through a scary time in America and the entire world, but someday there will be new technologies or new ways of working that will have emerged from this.
It's almost like thinking out of the box. We didn't have a choice, and it's forced us all to move into different areas that we really, truly never explored before. So hopefully there will be some good practices that come out of this. And I do have to say, I mean, this is affecting the entire world. Regardless of political affiliation, you have to be pretty proud of what's happening in Ohio with Dr. Act and Governor DeWine. It's great that they have taken this so seriously from the beginning, and hopefully that will minimize the number of people who end up getting infected by this or losing their lives. There is business out there. The safety of our staff and the people we serve is just paramount. So we're taking all the necessary precautions that we can while still trying to be supportive of the people we serve.
Talking with Dwayne Cassara, CEO, Directions for Youth and Families. You know, you mentioned the governor and Dr. Acton, Dr. Amy Acton, head of the health department. They've done an amazing job at being straight shooters and giving really alarming information without alarming people.
Yeah, you know, it's two things when I listen to them. One, I trust them because they're being honest. And two, they're so respectful in their delivery. And I think both of those things, you know, often when we talk in therapy, I always tell people it's nothing magical. You're really just trying to get people to some of the basic things. And those basic things are, you know, honesty and respect and responsibility and trust. And usually these things are foreign things in their lives because they move so far away from them. These two are a perfect example of how just holding to some basic value is really going over extremely well, particularly in this time of crisis. There's many things they could do, wouldn't be responsible. Their behavior is so respectful, honest, and trusting. We're pretty fortunate for that.
Obviously, there are families that are living on the edge all the time. And when you throw this kind of mix into it, this is really scary stuff.
Yeah. You know, this is one of the things that our staff said when we first were trying to make decisions of what we were going to do. And believe me, our initial plans changed within 24 hours, and then they changed again, and then they changed again. So like everybody else's, it's got to remain a fluid process as we adjust to new parameters that all of us are working in. One of the first things they talked about when kids with schools closed is we need to be available to them. We have to keep our centers open, but then the day later is when the numbers came out of how many you were allowed to have in a group, so we had to close them. But they brought up a very good point. You know, the parents were prepared to have their kids at home. Like, kids aren't any different than adults. You're sitting around the house, and what do? You unnecessarily snack or eat, mm-hmm. as some people use as an expense of self-medicating too. And as our staff were telling me, they're eating through their food. And these aren't families that had, you know, a plethora of food anyway. So this was just a... they knew this was going to head down a bad way soon, so we needed to start providing meals. And I think the fact that our numbers exponentially have grown each day is a sign of that. It's going to be a struggle, and it's going to be a long struggle.
Yeah, you know, you think about, for instance, I'm talking to you from my house right now, working from home, and I've never worked from home before, so that's a huge adjustment. But it's a far bigger adjustment for a kid. Their whole life is completely geared differently now to the way it's supposed to be.
It certainly is. And then our centers are actually rescued from some of the chaos in their homes. And now they're stuck there, you know, and this is increasing stress levels all over the place, which in tune just breeds a bunch of other things that aren't necessarily the most positive. So some of us are bored, but know that there's other people who are really struggling in that process. And there's just a full continuum of how people are going to be impacted by this.
Talking with Dwayne Cassara, CEO, Directions for Youth and Families. Just from a broader aspect of this, Dwayne, you know, if this does go on for a month or two where people are expected to and encouraged or even ordered to stay at home, what sort of mental health outlook does that pose for the country overall?
Well, probably the two biggest things that come up in mental health are anxiety and depression. Everybody who's listening probably knows somebody who experiences one or the other, or they may, in fact, experience one or the other, or both. It's very common for both to be there. So this is certainly going to escalate those things. And having access to service is critical. We have kept all of our referral lines open. We've actually just expanded that. We needed to make sure that we can meet the needs of the people out there. I think other people are trying to do that as well, trying to balance that with being able to financially stay afloat. Fortunately, at this point, we have not had to make cuts yet. I'm trying everything that we can to avoid that. We want to keep people working, but it's difficult. So there's a whole business side to it all. Then there's a whole practice side of it. And then there's a whole community need part. This is when you talk about looking at it from a macro perspective, it's huge. And there's so many different variables that are affecting everything that we're doing right now. But I don't see any mental health issues decreasing. If anything, I see them escalating. My fear is that some of this stress will start to spill over into putting people at risk, or domestic violence increasing, or abuse increasing, or neglect even increasing. And we hope that that's not a byproduct. I think everybody needs to do their part to assist in this whole process and check on people, make sure they're safe. Phone calls can still be done, and just even giving somebody a little bit of relief from perhaps the chaos in their home, I think is critical.
And I guess last point on that too, that just makes this all the more tragic, is at the time we're recording this, more than 700 Americans have died so far, and have closure in something like this.
Yeah, it truly, the numbers keep growing. I just think, I just looked at numbers the other day just to see how quickly it was escalating in Ohio, and the cases went up by 28% in one day, and that's unbelievable to me. So this is trending in a bad direction. As everyone has said, we certainly aren't even close to coming to the peak of what we're going to experience. That's going to carry an awful lot of stuff with it. So it's we're in this for the long, certainly not planning on anything opening up again within a month or 2 months. It seems smart at this point to keep as much social distancing in place as we can, so that, as they have keep saying, so that we can flatten the curve.
Well, the news certainly is dire. Give us some good news as we wrap up here, Dwayne. What do you got good to tell us?
I mean, actually, it's an opportunity also to explore things with kids, have fun with them. It's an opportunity for people to catch up with people who they haven't talked to in a long time, and do that, support them, be loving, hugging people, being patient with people. This really is an opportunity for us to do many things on that we all say, oh, we don't have time for it. Well, we're being given a gift of time here, folks. So take advantage of it. Check in on people. I called a buddy of mine who is younger, probably 20 years younger than I am, but I know he lives alone, and I just wanted to make sure he's okay. We had a great conversation. This really is just time for us to reconnect and pull things together. There can be a lot of positive things out of this. And wash your hands and quit hoarding toilet paper. Wrong with people. I don't think that's going to be a new diagnosis in the DSM, the new one. I'm going to push for that. Orders of toilet paper. What is wrong with you? Stop it. Just stop it. It's not very responsible or respectful.
I guess I can't argue with that. Your Directions for Youth and Families is a nonprofit agency. So if folks want more information, maybe they are seeking advice or help, or if they want to help out your agency, Dwayne, how do they do that?
They can. Our website has many resources too. It's www.dfyf.org.
DFYF.org. Again, Dwayne Casares, CEO, Directions for Youth and Families. Hang in there, Dwayne, like all the rest of us. I hope things go well for you.
Thank you, Dave. You too, bud.
This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan, heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS AM, that's 1460 ESPN Columbus, and Sunday morning at 7 on WBNS FM. Sports Radio, 97.1 The Fan.
Join us again next Sunday for Columbus Perspective.